And welcome to Inside Baseball with Old Chestnut. I'm Liam Allen with my friend Morris Sachs. Good to have you back, MB.
Good to be back. Hey, I was hoping you'd let that song finish out. That was the encore of the first Fish show I took Lisa to.
Wow.
Yeah.
And finally Lisa was like, wait, I recognize one of these songs.
She really liked it. My kids hate the fact that when I go to anything, I have to leave early. Like I can't deal with the get out of town stuff. So we were watching this show, and we had, you know, this is back when they sold the floor seats instead of that GA nonsense.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So we had good seats, but I knew there was just, you know, one or two songs left. So we walked to the back of the floor and they let this thing rip. And it was just breathtaking. And as soon as it was over, you know, we got out of Madison Square. And then, you know, we had this little gimmick where you cut through Penn Station.
Okay, yeah.
Go up the other side on, what is it, 8th Avenue, maybe?
Yeah, out to 8th.
And then Dave picks us up, West Side Highway. And there's a great pizzeria in the Bronx. It's like where the buses, and it's the last stop on the subway.
Oh, wow.
So we would stop there and get a couple slices. Dave always wanted his Diet Coke. And then we were nourished on our trip home.
Dialed in, yeah.
Between no floor seats, and I'm not eating pizza anymore, so I guess those days are
long gone.
But you know, the couch tour,
yeah,
is pretty good. So
absolutely, yeah.
How was your time off?
It was wonderful, you know. It was poor timing because they got the storm of the season last night in Maine. They got 18 inches of snow, and I had FOMO the last 3 weekends, so I'm up there chasing snow, and we got a little, and it's always a good time with the kids, but they got hammered last night. The whole North Country, all the ski mountains, everything Vermont got 18 inches, you know, beautiful situation.
Good, good. Apparently, friends of ours told us there was a fundraiser in Burlington, Vermont, where a signed Fish poster was up for auction. And guess who bought it?
Let me get the price tag on the thing first. Signed Fish poster.
Yeah, I think it might have been $2,500.
Okay, all right, okay.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I'm retired.
Some of these things get out of control, though. There's some lunatics out there, including
not
yourself.
In Burlington, Vermont.
I know. Oh, that was a charity fundraiser?
Yeah.
Convenient.
Yeah. So did you feel like you had enough time off? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was dying to get back to this. I got to do the St. Patrick's Day show by myself, which, please.
By the way, huge, huge hit.
Thank you.
Huge hit. I thought it was spectacular.
Thank you.
And, it was nice to see we get as many downloads for that as any normal show.
I know. My mother was pleased. My mother was pleased. I didn't use any vulgar language. I didn't embarrass my sister. Okay, I did well.
It's very good. Is your sister still doing that show from time to time?
No, she doesn't do the show anymore. She now is a judge for competitions.
Really?
So they'll fly her out to Seattle to judge 500 girls dance in a hotel ballroom Saturday and Sunday, and they cut her a
Wow.
check. Yeah, she's a big deal in Irish step dancing.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I saw that live on Broadway way back when. She might
Did
have
you
been
really?
dancing. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Get out of here. What, you saw Riverdance?
How could you not?
Amazing.
I had my mother-in-law. What else the fuck was I gonna do?
Incredible. Yeah, dude, that was my sister. My sister did the show for years.
Yeah.
Yeah,
You
sure.
know, it's not my thing,
Right.
but I sincerely respect the effort. I mean, that's fucking hard.
It's incredible, dude. And those guys, the Riverdance are the pros. The coordination and the timing and the rehearsal that went into it, you know, when I was 16, it was enough. I had had enough, you know. But, you know, let add it to the list of poor decisions. Okay, it's like, you want to hang out with the girls and go dance? No, thanks.
Oh, you mean the poor decision was saying no thanks?
Yeah, it's a terrible decision. I'm gonna go play
Yeah.
lacrosse with the guys. Good call. You dope.
Well, the good news is you didn't end up a father at 17,
Right, exactly.
which might have happened with
Worked
your
out okay.
charm and suave, debonair way.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. But no, it's been fun. Like, what have I done? I mean, I've watched the video go up. I just watching the video go up 5% a day. You know, like somebody called Jerome Powell. I'll give Lisa Abramowitz, Bloomberg Surveillance, call him a bartender that's still pouring drinks. And he's, you know, he hasn't they haven't hit last call. And every week it just churns higher and churns higher. What are we gonna come out and say? We can't come on and urge caution when the market just rips and rips, you know?
Well, the time off gave me a interesting opportunity to be a little bit introspective, which probably not all that exciting to the younger people who want to hear about the great trades and but I think I figured out some stuff, and I kind of share it with you. The seminal moment was when I was speaking with our dear friend Anthony Peters, who had mentioned, if I have this correctly, that he was on a plane and he watched two movies. One was this movie called Dumb Money, and the other was Barbie. Well, he's British, so I forgive him for the Barbie thing. But when he said Dumb Money, now I've seen that movie and I watched it again last night after I thought about this. And the first thing that popped in my head when he brought up Dumb Money, and I don't know how this happened. I learned not to question these things. But the phrase, give me a lever long enough and a fulcrum to rest it upon, and I can move the earth. So I thought about that, and it brought up this idea of leverage and what's going on in the marketplace. And a number of weeks ago, one of my friends, I'll mention his name, Henson. I hope he doesn't get upset with me, but we are talking somewhat regularly. I've known him 20 something years, and he's more comfortable being in the equity markets than I was gonna say than I am, but that would probably include everybody. But again, a very talented guy and respect his opinion. He kind of went through some math with me about the amount of money sitting in money market funds, this and that. And he, I believe, predicted he thought we might get a pretty good rally. And we did. And I think we're either close to his target or not far from his target. But it was this notion of the amount of money lying around that triggered his interest. And I apologize for not having this in a cohesive structure. That's unfortunately when you don't have a script, and it's free, this is what you get. But what I kind of realized was that book that I talk about all the time, the Satan's Bushel, where it explains traders trading huge amounts of grains and what the real situation is with the farmers who have to collect the grain. And so it's this situation of an overlapping of the traders having an opinion and then the real people making all these things happen. And so the amount of money around in a large extent kind of demands or explains the prices that you get. And in his case, he concluded that there was more money than was going to be comfortable sitting money market fund rates and was going to move into equities. And it was a great call. One of the things I've wondered about for a long time is it seemed like there's been a lot of money floating around. And I really wasn't sure where the money was coming from because the Fed has been engaged in this quantitative tightening. And the guys like Dave Zervos, who said, look at the Fed's balance sheet, the risk assets will follow. And they had a good call. But the Fed's balance sheet has been declining week over week. I forget the exact numbers. You can look them up. But what I was introduced to the notion that I hadn't paid much attention to because, I'm not in the markets every day anymore. But the Fed, during this whole quantitative easing cycle, created a entity called like the Reverse Repurchase Agreement Program. Now, it's a reverse repurchase agreement. It's just a financing thing. The purpose of understanding that exactly isn't really relevant to what I want to talk about. But when the Fed had finished its quantitative easing, there was a significant amount of money left in this reverse repurchase agreement.
2.5 trillion.
It could be. I don't know the number. Okay. So
I've got it in front of me.
yeah, okay. So as that money comes out of that fund, because the rate paid on that is lower than other things, it moves money into the banking system, number one. Number two, and I think more importantly, that money is money that increases the velocity or the turnover in money, which, I think MV equals PQ. So if velocity picks up, you're going to get growth, right? But if I have this right, that money is due to run out in September coming up. And what happens then is really anybody's guess because the Fed will still be in a quantitative tightening mode where they're reducing their balance sheet by, what is it, $2.5 billion a month or something like that,
Yeah,
or
something like that, yeah.
whatever the number is. So what have we seen recently? We've seen the stock market go up. We've seen gold go up. We've seen crypto go up. More importantly, we've seen credit spreads tighten dramatically. And so the question for me is what happens as we head into the time when this reverse repurchase program ends. Now, there are true believers out there, and I think Dave Zervos is one of them, that says the Fed is going to just continue to provide more than ample reserves to the banking system. I was really disappointed by the Fed's Open Market Committee meeting this week, not because of what they did, but where they left it. And the reason it disappoints me is because it's leaving me with no interest in the marketplace. And I'll explain to you why. Because now we're going to get a bunch of chuckleheads chasing every economic release, trying to prognosticate what the Fed's next move is going to be. And it's going to go on that way for the next 6 months to a year.
All spring, all summer, all
I
summer.
don't have any interest in hanging around watching payroll numbers and inflation numbers and purchasing manager numbers and yada, yada, yada.
Been doing it for 2 years now.
And before I had an opinion about rates, shape of the curve, I don't really feel comfortable with what's going to happen. And one of the things I've always preached is if you don't love your positions, get out. And I've also commented that we're in a unique state where you can earn over 5% on a treasury bill, arguably, with no risk. So I've been debating whether to pitch the last bit of this long paper that I own. Frankly, because I like having the income. If there's no interest income coming in, I'm eating into capital. Now, fortunately, I can do that, and it's not going to move any needles, but I like showing a positive P&L. And, the 3 month bill, while it does yield a 5 3/8, is something lower than I'm earning. But I have to walk the walk. So I suspect by this time next week, I'll be out of all of my risk assets. And I'm just gonna take a break until something breaks, which I'll get to in a minute, or I get an epiphany of which way things are happening. But I spent the time while we were away trying to get my arms around where things were. And it's been very difficult for me because for somebody who is immersed in the business, like I am and you are to some extent now, not to have a confident view is very unsettling. And so I'm trying to think about how do we come and talk for have a talk for an hour, and what are we going to talk about, right? You know that this may come as a surprise, but we don't have a team of writers. It's me and Liam, and we're just having a conversation. But we'll see where it goes. A couple of things that I've been working on, which is a bit of an explanation slash apology to a number of people who've been trying to get hold of me or send me emails and getting very short replies. It's no secret that I've been involved in the real estate market now for a fairly long time. And again, I've done okay with it. I think the big benefit has been the tax effect. But all of these deals are levered. And it started hitting me, this notion of the leverage. That movie, Dumb Money, it seems like the guys who made out really well because they were using options, which was a form of leverage, right? Okay. Well, the way you make a lot of money in real estate is you use a lot of leverage. So let me give you, and you know, I've made this mistake before where I try and do the math on the fly, but you know, the deal works like this. You get a bunch of guys together and you find a piece of property and you do the analytics and you figure out, you know, if we build an apartment building here, you know, we can make an IRR of, you know, 25%, something like that. And so you put up a bunch of your own money, you get hold of the land, you develop, do all the plans, which we would call pre-con, and then you go about your business. You go to a bank, you get a construction loan, you get a contractor. There's a thing called the GMP, guaranteed maximum price, from the contractor that's backed up by an insurance policy, and you build a building. Okay. So as you're about done building the building, and I'm talking rentals, not condos at this point, you've created value. You've taken land and built something that people want. And so what happens is, let's say you borrowed, again, maybe I get the numbers right, I don't know, but let's say you put up 10 million of your own money and you borrowed 50 million to build a building. So now you're in for 60 million, but the building's built. And based on the financials, you get this thing called net operating income, NOI. And the way you value a building is you take the net operating income, which is pretty simple. It's your revenues less your direct costs. And you don't subtract from that any of your financing. That's not relevant because people finance things different ways. So you take that net operating income and you divide by the cap rate. So let's say you have a net operating income of, I don't know, 20, $2 million. That would be a building that would value the building at maybe $100 million, something like that. I'm not sure I have all these numbers right, but in practice it works. Okay. Well, you go to a second bank, and now they'll loan you against the value of the newly created building. You take that money, you pay off your original loan. But the amount you borrowed is well in excess of the first loan. That money's yours. And if you never sell the property, you never pay tax on it. And if you do what a lot of New York families do, you put it in a trust. When the creator of the trust, let's say me, dies, the law allows you to move the cost up to the market. So that gain never gets taxed. So that's why you see these multi-generational families building these real estate empires, because they keep refinancing the buildings. Over time, the rents go up, the building value goes up, the refinance, they take more money out. It's a virtuous cycle. The problem, and again, I apologize for getting the numbers wrong. I should have taken the time to write them down, but the concept is valid. And that's how a lot of these developers get to be very rich, because they take a lot of money out and they don't have to sell the asset. And over time, rents grow and the value, as the NOI goes up, the value of the building goes up, and you can keep refinancing. Okay.
A fantastic game. It kind of got our former president jammed up a little playing that game.
Yeah, because he did what most developers do, is they spend the money and they figure they'll figure something else out. Okay. Because there's other things you can do to avoid paying the taxes. I won't go into it now, but the obvious one is 1031 like-kind exchange. So I guess, trying to get back on track here, a number of my properties are Manhattan rentals. And during COVID, it was a problem because people weren't paying. No point in kicking them out. One is just not nice. Two, nobody was renting. So, but the bank was, like Goodfellas, fuck you, pay me. So during that whole COVID thing, we're digging out, we're trying to dig out from that. In the meantime, rentals are now up to over $100 a square foot. So to put that in real terms, you can get a 490 square foot studio apartment in Manhattan for $5,000 a month. That's $60,000 a year. That's got to be, what do you have? What is that, $1 million of income you got to earn or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
So,
In New York City, because New York City, you're making $1 million. New York City's whacking you for 250 off the top. New York State's going to take
that's
another
my
100.
point, yeah,
You're down to
right?
650. The numbers decline quickly.
Yeah. So it's not, I
Five
again,
grand, $100 a square foot. You're back to.
for a studio.
It's incredible.
I mean, 500 square feet, it's not a lot.
You don't have to tell me that's a big hotel room in New York City. Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, in any event, a number of these properties are coming up for refinancing. And because of the way the COVID went, where people were leaving, it took a while to fill them up. So lost a bunch of money there. And then there's only so much you can increase the rent per year. We're a little bit behind. So, of maybe the five properties that I'm going through with this right now, I think one's a total loss. I think it's going to be a zero. I think along the rest, the spectrum is going to be, we might sneak by to, it's going to be fine. But the reason I want to talk a little bit about this is because we're going into this time, the September period we keep talking about, where money's going to become less available. And, the boots on the ground thing sometimes is good, sometimes is bad. Sometimes you see things and you think you can extrapolate it, and you're right, and sometimes you're wrong. But why I think this is a problem is because, we are wintering in Scottsdale, Arizona, and the property prices have gone up relatively smartly in our short period of time here. And they seem to have kind of stabilized at a high level. But not being a a genius, you just can't help but notice what's going on. So you have every major league sports team in the Phoenix area. You've got baseball, basketball, football, hockey. Am I missing anything?
No.
Okay, so there's pro teams here. You have a more friendly tax environment. You have warm or blisteringly hot weather, similar to Florida, which is where the old people go, right? Because they don't want the cold. Plus, now you have the medical community is really excellent here. They've got a Mayo Clinic. They've got some of the top cancer researchers in the country or the world here. So it's really turning into a spot. Now, Intel is going to be building a chip plant here. And so I get in the bright idea. Well, it seems to me there's a lot of tailwinds here. Maybe it'd be good to do some development. And one of my fraternity brothers from college lives out here half the year. And so we've sort of reconnected, and he's been a developer here for a number of years. And we were having dinner last week, and he was explaining me the way the development works here, which compared to New York
It's like
it's checkers.
the easy
It's,
pass lane compared to stopping at the
it,
putting a token in the
yeah.
basket on the Garden State.
I mean, you know, if I don't even know how to compare it to New York development. It's just, it's crazy, stupid, easy here. All sorts of reasons. We don't need to go into it, but it makes it easy to develop property. But we drove around for an hour and he showed me 10 stalled projects because they can't get the financing.
So what do? They have foundations for 100 houses or framed, and then it just stops. Yeah.
It's a whole
Yep.
cornucopia of disasters.
Wow.
Well, there's nothing worse for a developer to see block of vacant land with a crane on it and a couple of bulldozers just sitting there.
Infrastructure. Yep.
Well, and nobody working. Because, you know, like they say, the landlord never sleeps. The bank loan never sleeps, and that money you never get back. It's not
Yeah.
like you can pass the cost along because the cost is the cost. So what's everybody talking about right now? You've got the office, the commercial office space is a debacle. I'm looking at stuff out here, which for the time being appears to be overlevered. The ETF market, I've read, has just gone bananas, right? The growth in the ETF. I won't speak to anyone in particular, but I know many of them contain overt leverage. Many contain covert leverage, which I didn't know was legal, but as it was explained to me a couple of years ago, these guys can go out and do swaps, which allows them to increase risk without it showing up on the balance sheet.
Nice.
And you know what was that thing I said a while ago? The Fed was going to tighten till something broke. Well, nothing's broke just yet, right? But let's go for a minute and take a look at the yield curve, which is what I'm comfortable talking about. So the 2-year note yields, let's call it a 460. Okay. And if you say the federal funds rate, which is what I generally compare the 2-year note rate to, was it 5.5%? Okay. So you've got the 2-year note 100 basis points lower in yield, or rich to the funds rate. Now, that is normal in a Fed easing environment. The market is predicting eases, so they price it in. So I'm completely copacetic with a 4.5% 2-year note. What I don't understand, and this goes back to the reverse repurchase situation, maybe, is the long bond is a 4 3/8. So it's a lower yield than the long bond. Now, I hesitate to say this because I don't like when people jump down my throat when I make a mistake. But typically, in Fed easings, you would see a positively sloped yield curve. Now, the fact that the long bond is a 4 3/8, the number just seems wrong to me. And for the longest time, and I don't think I've said this online, but I've said it to EG, I've said it to Leslie enough times, he probably wants to slug me. But the long end is always traded very short to me. And I think that's a manifestation of all of the professional traders who have the curve trade on. They're long the front end, they're short the back end. Apparently, a London hedge fund fired 10% of its staff for losing money. And I think that's the trade they got taken out on, is this curve steepener. You've got a lot of things happening here which continue to give me some pause. Clearly, I missed the boat on gold. It's gone up. Completely missed the boat on Bitcoin and Tether. Again, what can I tell you? I tried, it didn't work. But yet, having money in the longer dated stuff has seemed to make my returns look not so terrible. But what's happening now, and this is just in the short run, but we're going to see if this continues. So you had treasury rates drop on Friday. Now, at the same time, if I have this right, gold went down and the stock market went down.
Bitcoin too.
Okay. So there is normally a correlation. As interest rates go down, the price of gold should go up. As interest rates go down, the price of the stock market should go up. And as interest rates go down, in theory, the cryptos should go up. But they didn't. Now, I don't know how long this has been going on for. I haven't been focused on it. But we call those things correlations. And one thing I'm pretty comfortable saying is, the breakdown of correlations typically precedes fairly dramatic events. And so, between the breakdown and correlations, and they may reverse on Monday and then continue as normal. But the one reason I'm still here, and John Merriweather's not, and John Corzine's not, and a whole host of people, is because I've always tried to figure out where was the body buried, where is the problem? And now, between the collapse in credit spreads, these one-day options, which create the potential for tremendous volatility, you have a lot of things lining up here, which might be dramatic. And so again, for me, when I look at a, and I'm staring at it now, the WI 3 month bill is basically a 4.5% yield. If the inflation rate, somebody asked about real yields, I'm not great with the real yield stuff, but let's call the inflation rate 3.5.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's lower in theory. Let's call it 3.5. You're still picking up 100 basis points over the with the 2 year note, and you're picking up slightly less over the 30-year bond. Now, the 30-year bond, you have convexity issues there. So that's a pick'em, because the rates can go up, rates can go down. If rates go down, you're going to be glad you own it. If rates go up, you're not. And trying to be a simple minded guy with this thing, a normal yield curve, the longer dated paper has a higher yield in a normal environment. And one day we'll be in a normal environment. And if I think the 2 year note yield is right, then that would argue that the longer rates are wrong, meaning they're too low. So everything does better in a positive slope yield curve. But I think getting there is going to be very painful. And part of the pain is going to be the real estate guys getting stopped out. I think the credit spreads are going to widen. There could be some credit events with commercial, not commercial paper, but I saw there's been a huge inflow into corporate bonds by individual investors. So there's a lot of stuff going on there that just I can't really get my arms around. And it doesn't make for exciting podcasting, but that's just kind of how I see it right now. I mean, do you have any thoughts?
No, that's what I came for. I came to hear how you see it. So that's why, if that's how you see it, that's what I signed up for. So, and everyone else that's listening, that's what they want to hear. What I mean, I agree with you. If the yield curve has been so inverted for so long with no signs of correcting and normalization, and that, like you said, that long bond hasn't moved. It's just sat there and treaded water, and I don't know what what's the word? I'm the catalyst that makes it move is, and the FOMC meetings haven't done it, and Jawboning hasn't done it, so it's yeah.
Well, we're in, even though the Fed seems to want to ease, I mean, you talked about easing, easing, easing. It does seem to me we're in pretty easy financial conditions.
They're still issuing T-bills, if they're
Well, the government has to fund itself.
that kind of well, we cleared that hurdle yesterday. Is the debt still doesn't bother you? That's gone on the back burner lately. That is
So, Anthony had written to me about this. He had a very funny way of putting it. He said it was like the guy jumped off the Empire State Building, and at floor 10, he said, "So far, so
So
good."
far, so good. Yeah, not bad.
Here's the reason I'm less concerned than most about the size of the debt. The first reason, which carries little validity, is that I've heard it for 30 years.
I know, I know.
Now,
The chart's ugly.
I also remember getting gasoline for 50 cents a gallon. So
Yeah.
I know the times change. But what people fail to understand, and This is one of those things where we went back to that episode, which probably didn't get as many views as your Irish folk dance video. Assets equals liabilities plus net worth, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we have some amount of debt, whatever it is. Okay. What people don't think about is the United States of America has a tremendous amount of assets. Okay. Now, look, I'm not going to try and convince you we need to sell the Grand Canyon and we need to sell Central Park or we need to sell the great state of New Jersey. But the country has assets which are worth a lot. And maybe they're trivial in compared to the debt. But what we do have, which is not trivial compared to the debt, is we have revenues. Every day, Americans get up, get out of bed, and most of them go to work. And they're creating something and they're creating a profit. Okay. The problem with debt is its consumption moved forward. So you want to buy that car, you go and you borrow money, okay? How many people wait to buy the car till they have the whole thing, all the money saved up? I mean, nobody does that, okay? So my platform, if elected, now it would be more along the lines of rationing goods and services and modifying the tax plan. So the tax plan wouldn't necessarily be a change in the rate. I mean, I whatever rate you pick, someone's going to disagree with you. But what happens, and I touched on it with the real estate people. So let's take Bill Gates, just because he's the first one that comes to mind. And he's amassed some enormous amount of money, which is great. It's the American dream, right? The fact that he was trafficking with Jeffrey Epstein, we can leave for the after show, along with Bill Clinton and Abe Dershowitz and the guy from Apollo,
It's a great picture lined up together.
and who else? And you know how who's the guy from Goldman?
Solomon?
Yeah,
Solomon?
you know David Solomon doesn't have any money
He
because he
wasn't.
wasn't part of Epstein's entourage.
Yeah. Nary a whisper of his name.
But if you look back at the Second World War, okay, I just picked that because I like that time period. You know, you couldn't go and get an unlimited amount of gasoline. You couldn't buy an unlimited amount of sugar. So to go to the notion that debt is consumption pushed forward, the reply would be, we're going to reduce consumption. And going back to the Bill Gates example, because I got caught in my own thought process, he has acquired all this wealth, which is fantastic. But because of the laws which benefit yours truly, he can borrow against that wealth and spend it. And when he dies, that ostensibly is tax-free income.
Dude, he's got an astounding amount of acreage of farmland. He's like one of the biggest farmland holders in America. Like everyone's like, why Bill Gates? He's got tons of acreage all over the West. Yeah, it's just fascinating stuff. Yeah.
But I guess so. How do I reconcile my notion of the debt? And I haven't put pencil to paper, but you know, you calm the public by saying the billionaires are now going to pay their fair share.
I like that.
Let's not even talk about the rate. Let's just say, and by the way, I believe in Canada, this is how it works. If you go take out $100 million loan against $100 million of equity that you have, that's income. So just imagine
Yeah.
all these guys who are living off of borrowing against inflated
Yeah.
assets. Okay.
Yeah.
And there isn't anybody outside of the real estate world that's going to fight that. And you, amongst the bread and circus that keeps the population calm, you explain to them this is how we're going to tax the rich.
Famous.
And if we get into this situation where, we have to start paying stuff off aggressively, there's the rationing. But the real problem, I believe, isn't so much the debt, it's the continuous deficits. So, there's that saying, if you find yourself digging a hole, stop digging. And you see these people, it's shocking to me how obtuse these politicians are. And you can't spend your way out of financial crisis. I mean, what was it, Bernanke's quote? It works in practice, but does it work in theory? I don't know. Why has it been so difficult for some people to trade the market recently? It's because we've been trying to play by the old rules, pre-quantitative easing, right? And now is we're undoing what we did. And I'm not going to debate whether it was the right thing or the wrong thing, because depends where you come down on that, and that's not the purpose. But it needs to be corrected. And the easier you do that, the better off everyone is. But you're not fixing things when you keep spending more than you take in. And I don't, that's the part that scares me, is not the lack of ability to pay down the debt. It's the lack of ability to stop spending. And if consumers spend, eventually the credit card companies stop letting them use the credit card and they go forever broke. Or if you
Yeah,
can't
yeah.
make your home payment, they take your home.
Yeah.
No one with these in the government that has to pay the price for their bad decision making, So I don't know. There were other things going on in the world which I find, I'm going to say mildly interesting, but you saw over the weekend there was a mass shooting in Moscow.
I did.
I mean, dozens of people are dead. That's a curious situation, because the number of people who died, that was a military operation. That wasn't just a bunch of chuckleheads who decided, I don't like the way things are, let's just go kill a bunch of people. The way they're going to handle that, it's going to be a little bit of a Kaiser Soze thing. They're going to find out who they think did it, and then they're going to go round up their relatives, and they're going to kill them, after they torture them.
That's a weird situation. The math doesn't math on that. Directly across from the FBI headquarters, and it took them an hour and a half to get there. Like a lot of people said, it's a Russian false flag, and like the Russians, they did it to point the finger at Ukraine so they can blame Ukraine, and then like they. It's like every it's dude. It's like the Nord Stream pipeline, dude. You remember when the Nord Stream pipeline blew up? Remember when the Nord Stream
In
pipeline?
the ocean, the one
Yeah.
in the ocean, yeah.
Oh yeah, I remember that story kind of faded away, that kind of faded away. These are weird. It's a weird stuff, dude. Like it's Russia. Everything, like you said, I assume they're lying. So whatever Russia says, when they come out and say this is clearly a Ukrainian operation, my gut tells me, I'm supposed to believe the Russian official statement.
Well, They are at war, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's what people don't seem to understand.
Yeah, yeah.
We have this situation, and I'm desperate not to touch it, but Israel is cleaning out the Hamas guys, and of course the Hamas guys are now embedded with civilians because that's the way they run their operation. But I think, unfortunately, is because of Hamas's approach to this thing, a lot more civilians are gonna die. And again, not to be heartless about this, you read enough history, this is what wars are like. You people die until one side can't continue.
Did you read about wars? Wars went on for years, like 10, 12 years. They're like, oh, yeah, the War of 1812 lasted until 1824. You know, like the Russian whatever Finnish War of Winter went on for 13 years. And yeah, like the only the modern generation thinks that everything's like Operation Desert Storm, where we're gonna turn on the TV on Friday night and we're gonna watch, you know, the F-16s come in and, you know, what was it? Well, shock and awe, and we'll be out of here in 72 hours and, you know, stick the flag in the ground. That's not happening anymore, and that's not happening in Europe. And there's tang like NATO is tangled up in it with Poland. It's an uncomfortable. It's still uncomfortable situation, clearly.
There's nothing good. What didn't surprise any of us who've been following the situation, but when you saw the United Nations people who were
Who?
involved,
Who?
exactly. Poor Kate Middleton, huh?
Who? Next. Keep going.
Princess.
Keep what else you got? Keep going. We're not doing the British royal family's drama this week. Let's go. Sorry.
I just give me 30 seconds.
How about I give you 30 seconds? How about they think that the AI, that they made the AI, it's a deep fake video and she had the same sweater on in 2017 and they digitally altered it and things aren't really all well since you brought it up. That's the theory. That's what I read this morning. I saw the original video where she's wearing her black and white striped sweater from 2017. And then they said, here's the new deep fake AI video and all is not hunky dory there. So there's your 30 seconds on that.
The thing that I would focus on is they have a healthcare system that, I've known a lot of people in the UK for a long time. One dear friend who passed a few years back had to wait 8 years to get her hip replaced.
NIH, the NIH system.
Her son was diagnosed with a small skin melanoma, which they ignored, and he ultimately died from it. Yet the princess gets immediately, into the hospital, yada, 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 top medical care. I just, it's a little bit like the same thing with our politicians. Why do they live on a different realm than everyone else? And
Nobody
yeah.
cares. Nobody cares. The common people don't care. The common people, their major focus is on minor shit. It's bread and circuses for 80% of the people out there. 80, you know, there's 90% of people don't care about what goes on in the market, interest rates, what's going on in the world. They want to watch their football game on Sunday. They want to go work on Monday. They want to get by for another week. And they don't bother with that shit. They're just like content with, you know, the world and the calendar going by. And they don't get outraged that Bill Gates paid zero in taxes while Joey working down at the Ford plant paid, you know, 40% of his salary, you know?
So this begs the question, and this is clearly not the appropriate place to talk about it, but that's the beauty of live TV. So I'm watching this movie again, Dumb Money. And the kid is going on and on about how it's not a level playing field. And it's not. It's not. the institutions have access to money, technology, economy of scale, information. There are numbers of hedge funds that bribe reporters to get stories early. How many times do you sit here and you see the stock market move before the economic release? Okay. I know when the little guy goes in to trade, he's getting, buggered with the execution. And in his case, maybe it costs him $6. But the Citadels and the whoevers of the world are doing it a billion times a day. And, I in my limited execution experience, what I think they're doing is illegal. And there's no attention that's being paid to it. So what I, to talk about the chance to be a bit reflective in the time off is, you and I set out, this was 3 years ago, right?
4 years, yeah.
And, I'm kind of wondering what is there left for us to do? I mean, we can turn up here every week, and you and I will do that regardless. Maybe it's on Simmons Lane or Gimbel's, who knows? But I'm kind of wondering, to constantly point out these things that aren't gonna, it's not gonna matter. I just don't know for me where I, when I say me, I mean us, I apologize. But where's the value for the listener gonna be? I mean, to hear me say 2-year notes at 4.55 makes sense with a Fed funds rate of X, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what you tell me.
You'll see next Saturday when you get 400 emails and text messages. Well, no show this weekend. No show this weekend. What about this? What about that? What about this? What about that? So,
Okay.
I love watching you. I love sitting here doing it on Saturday and Sunday with you. I would do it no matter what. And I no matter you can't. I don't pay. I can't turn it off. All right. So like this week, I'm gonna be paying attention to the commercial real estate stuff. I'm gonna be thinking, oh, what, all the stuff that you talked about today, and then you're gonna watch. Now I have something to watch. I can watch QT unfold, and I can see what goes on in the money market funds. For and I can I've got a week's worth of stuff to pay attention to. It's not always like the hindsight that I enjoy. It's like what is he thinking about? I just want to hear what you're thinking. That's the value for me. And if it's this week, it's this is how I feel. That like nobody else is doing that. These guys come on and they shill and they'll come
Right.
up with a spin and it's more entertainment. Dude, I'm sitting on the edge of my seat. I haven't laughed in 30 minutes, but I'm getting to pick your brain, and I get the unfiltered 30 minutes of it. Like
Okay.
that to me is the value. And like I know for you don't get this. You don't get the same steak and potatoes that I get. I get a full meal and a full. I get a college class essentially
Okay.
from an esteemed professor.
Well, thank you.
I know
Thank
that's, but dude, I'm with you. Shit has been boring. Like, there's been Fridays where I'm like, what am I going to talk about? And I don't know if I'll ask buddies, like, what's going on this week? And they're like, like, I enjoy it.
Okay. Thank you. And, to the extent, we're friends, this goes on as long as we're both, on the right side of the lawn. But, I want to make sure that this doesn't turn into just an old man yelling at clouds. I'd like to create some value. Now, part of the value for me was not being in a trading room. It gave me a chance to work through my process. And one of the beauties of the setup we have now is I can see you. So when I'm talking and you look confused, I know I need to explain a little better. When you look bored, I know I need to change the subject. When I talk about the Kennedys, I know I need to shut up. Sorry, Mom. But I think part of the problem for me, and maybe I'll get over this again, watching the this film and seeing the way that the average guy is getting taken advantage of, it's really starting to irk me, especially when you have the masters of the universe spending billions of dollars because they've conned people into the system of hedge funds. And I put up a chart on the website. Now, I'm very frequently mentioning I had a public school education. And although for what I studied, it was one of the better places, which is accounting. But I do remember early on taking Introduction to Economics, which I got a solid B, unlike Money and Banking, which I got a C in. But you knew that. But in Econ 101, day one, they tell you it's unlimited wants versus limited resources. Well, at a certain point, and this is what this chart shows, it's just common sense. At some point, you get enough resources that you satiate your wants, meaning you have enough money to buy what you want. Now you're done. Now, in the history of mankind, we're talking about 1/10 of 1/10 of 1%, right? Most people never reach that. But as I'm watching these hedge fund guys in the behavior, it really, I think, to me, diminishes the industry. And I feel a little bit embarrassed by it last night. I was talking to a guy this week, a billionaire, and a car guy. And over at the country club here, you don't go into the parking area and see less than four Rolls Royces anytime you go in there. And I said to the guy, "What do you think of those cars?" He's like, "I want to buy one." I said, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." And he starts telling me about, the manufacturing, this and that. And I said, "Yeah, I guess." And he says, "But I really want it because it says I can have one and you can't." And that just kind of really hit me the wrong way, I don't want to turn this into a psychiatry session, but remember, I don't know, it was a year ago, 2 years ago, I crashed bad, and I kind of didn't know how that was going to work out. And I started thinking about what was important to me in life. And everything that was important to me in life had very little to do or nothing to do with money. Now, there's an element of Wall Street which is fun, okay, because it's intellectually stimulating. But I'm seeing more and more of these people that are in the wealth grab, and it's more about the, excuse my language, but the biggest dick contest. And I just, at this point in my life, I just don't really feel that excited about that anymore. So to the extent we can have conversations and create value, I'm delighted. The problem is, if I spend the week trying to read stuff, you come across all of these people, as you said, shilling. And I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear how you're trying to con somebody into buying your newsletter or put money in. I give you an example of just how absurd this situation is. We have a real estate partnership that was syndicated to a hedge fund. And the deal closed like 5 years ago. But because of some regulatory situation, we need to keep, they need, the hedge fund needs to keep the entity open. Okay. So for the last couple of years, I'm like, let's close this entity because we're getting 15, 20,000 bucks a year in legal and accounting fees. Plus, you have a corporation with a tax ID number and nothing going through there, which is rife for fraud. And so I'd say to the partners, look, yada, yada, yada. Right, we got to close this thing. And they're like, no, so-and-so needs to keep it open. And so you need to write us a check for 15,000 bucks for your share of the fees. And I said, I'm not doing that for two reasons. One is I refuse to keep this entity open to find out there's a problem. But secondly, those fees aren't being paid by the hedge fund. They're being paid by the investors in the hedge fund. So in my mind, there's a very good chance that they're double dipping on these things. And it's just, I just kind of feeling like, yeah, I benefited from the business. I think I, you know, went about it pretty legitimately. But I, you know, I've been really disappointed with the behavior, and I can't change it, but I can change the amount of time I spend with it, which is, and so therein lies the conflict. If we're going to have stuff to talk about, I gotta pay attention to things. And so I'm a little bit
Stop hanging out at the country club. It's there. Problem solved. Problem solved.
You gotta eat.
Get off Twitter. Stop going to the country club. We got a show. Here we go. Look, you're 15 minutes over the fucking red light here. Okay. Complain about not doing the show. Okay. So yeah,
Oh my God, is that
I'll see you in 3 weeks. Okay.
right? Well,
All right. Yeah,
I went off my
everyone,
meds. What
they're
can
gonna
I tell
bother
you?
you. They're gonna bother you. They don't ask me if I'm okay this week when there's a not the show. I get a couple people on Twitter that, send me funny pictures and stuff. You get text messages from like concerned friends. Okay. So yeah, enjoy that, my friend. And we'll see in a couple of weeks which is better. Coming to talk to me for an hour or dealing with Monday. What's up? No show. Is everything okay? Be
I guess
careful.
that's
Be careful what you wish for. Okay.
you're the best. I love
All
you,
right,
buddy.
pal.
Talk to you later.
See you later.